Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Madam Speaker, where specifically does the Constitution grant Congress the authority to enact an individual health insurance mandate?
Are you serious?
Yes, I am.
Absolutely.
Blue Monday, I'm a high blue Monday. Got to work.
Well, the pirate ship Obama continues to be an iceberg. A federal judge just ruled that Obamacare is unconstitutional. Not the entire Obamacare, of course, but a central element of the health care law, as we said on the Savage Nation when it came out, violates the Constitution. This, of course, deals the pirate ship Obama a real setback. The federal judge, Henry E. Hudson, in a 42-page ruling, said that the Obamacare requirement that most Americans carry insurance or pay a penalty exceeds the constitutional boundaries of congressional power, close quote. Now, I want to spend a lot of time on this because this ruling, whether you're into politics right now or not, or you just want me to play around, I'm not going to play around because this is probably the most important ruling of the entire regime, experience thus far. We knew that Obama was an inexperienced left-wing radical. We also knew that he was likely to overreach. We said during the Obamacare debate that he was overreaching. We said that it was unconstitutional. I quoted case law going back to FDR proving that it was unconstitutional, but most of you didn't listen. Now, I wrote an entire chapter called The Health Scare Fraud, What's Really in the Bill, in Trickle Up Poverty, and over 100,000 of you have read this book. I am going to ask you if you have seen a better description of what's really in the bill, and the answer is no. Nobody analyzed this bill as well as I did. Nobody did a more succinct chapter, and I would not be surprised if Judge Henry Hudson had himself read my book, The Health Scare Fraud, before he wrote this 42-page ruling. Because everything that I said about Obama's Marxist socialism, everything I said about his overreaching, everything I warned you about in this chapter and about how he was trying to seize control and turn this country into Cuba through Obamacare was true. And today we have been, frankly, held up to be correct. Now, I reviewed for you so many elements of this bill along the way. Maybe you have forgotten what was in the health scare bill. But I'm going to read you pieces of my chapter. For those of you who have not read, I'm suffering from a very severe back injury, by the way. You'll have to forgive me. I'm in intense pain from the UK ban, lawyers, to other problems. I am besieged with legal problems that are threatening to literally sink me. And so you'll have to forgive me if occasionally I make a mistake or whatever. I'm going to continue now. I'm not here to get your sympathy. I'm not doing that. I'm just telling you I'm in a little bit of pain. I want to read you from the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill, because today's ruling by the federal judge, frankly, confirms everything I warned you about, everything you needed to know about. So let me cut to the chase. Instead of reading something that may not be of any relevance to you, I want to talk to the young people listening to this show. Here's one for the single guys. Let's say you're a single guy, single gal, and you're not sure about politics, but you like listening to me because I remind you of somebody in your family or somebody that you never had in your family or someone you wish you had in your family. In other words, I become sort of an uncle, a Dutch uncle, or a father figure to you. I want you to understand that although there's a lot of sound and fury on the Savage Nation, most of it's based on reality. It's not theatric. And so I want to read you something that I wrote in Trickle Up Poverty. You have to understand how important this is. A judge just ruled that the law is unconstitutional. They cannot make you buy health care, in plain English. Now, when this came out, Nancy Pelosi, the crazy Nancy Pelosi, had the nerve to say, where do you think you're coming from, basically? Are you kidding? Are you crazy? Even asking me that. Are you serious? When a reporter said to her, are you sure this is constitutional? She said, are you serious? Old Nancy Pelosi, who rules with an iron whip. Let's say you're a single guy, okay? Let's say you have no plans to get married anytime soon. Let's say you're 28, 48, or 88 and have no projected need for pediatric services. So you're in the market to buy a health coverage plan without an option to insure children in order to enjoy lower premiums. You're a young guy. Too damn bad, I wrote. Let's say you're a woman and you're medically incapable of having children. Furthermore, you have no plans to pursue adoption. So you want a lower cost policy without maternity or newborn care. Too damn bad, I wrote on page 131. Because I pointed out section 1302 forces you to cover it anyway. I don't think you understand how important this stuff really is. Today a judge upheld everything that I tried to get America to understand in trickle-up poverty. Everything I spelled out in intense detail turned out to be true. So if you think that I don't know what I'm talking about or I'm doing it just for fun, you're mistaken. So let me continue. Section 1302 forces you to buy this coverage anyway. And then I asked, what if you prefer to go to a physician-owned hospital because they feel more personal, especially in a doctor-patient decision-making process, rather than the larger, more bureaucratic corporate-owned hospital, I asked? Too damn bad. While the current limited supply of physician-owned facilities will be allowed to exist, new physician-owned projects will not be able to receive reimbursement for Medicare and Medicaid patients under Section 6001. What does that matter to you? It matters a lot to you. It's all unbelievable what they try to do to you. I showed how excise tax were imposed upon people who had gold-plated plans, whether your employer pays for the coverage or whether you as a self-employed person pay for it out of pocket. Obama said, it's a sin to provide a generous health care plan for your family. Is it any wonder why the Dems in Massachusetts lost their seat in the Senate? We know the election of Scott Brown was as if a tsunami hit the White House, but the reasons why Brown won aren't necessarily obvious on the surface. It takes insight to break it down. Here's what was really going on. Again, I have to go backwards in order to go forwards. Only by looking backwards can you understand where we are living right now. The people of Massachusetts already have the sort of socialized medicine championed by Obama. They got stuck with it from Mitt Romney. At the time Romney's administration proposed it, it sounded like a good idea. The people voted for it, and now they've watched their premiums soar through the roof while service has decreased. As Fortune magazine has documented, Massachusetts now faces a number of undesirable side effects after launching Romney's health care program. Topping the list is the ever-increasing price tag. What accounts for the spike in costs and premiums in the Bay State, would you like to know? Two primary things. The adoption of guaranteed issue, that's a law requiring insurance companies to offer coverage regardless of the medical condition of the applicant. That would be as though you have a driving record which includes drunk driving, hitting pedestrians, running up on sidewalks and running over people. You would still be forced, you would still be allowed to buy car insurance if it was the government insuring you, because after all, Obama always thinks about the fall guy, right? Meaning the guy who pays the bill is the bad guy, according to Obama. You don't quite understand how they have everything backwards. You don't understand how communists think. The productive citizens are guilty, and the bums are the innocent victims of the guilty. You don't understand that because your mind has been so twisted by college or by the newspapers or by the television that you don't even understand they have everything backwards. I'm going to try and unpretzel your brain. So there it is. So in other words, I wrote, once again, Obamacare offers a similar disincentive to work harder and prosper due to higher health care taxes. Fortune points out the scenario in which a $55,000 earner contributes $4,400 a year towards insurance. At $65,000 a year, the bill is $6,300. so the family is paying a tax of $1,900 or 19% on that $10,000 raise. Did I mention that illegal aliens also receive free health care in Romney State? This, of course, is what happens when the government imposes socialized medicine. So the people, angered by this reality, voted their first Republican senator into office in 50 years. What happened in Massachusetts with high premiums and inferior coverage is about to happen in all 50 states. There is more bad news buried within the Obamacare bill. Now, I'm not going to read you every line from Trickle Up Poverty, because it's very important that you read it yourself. And I will summarize it for you today and tomorrow until you finally understand how important this show is to the survival of America and for you to maintain a freedom that you will never enjoy if you don't stop, known as Obama. Ladies and gentlemen, a tsunami has hit today. A tsunami has struck the pirate ship Pelosi today. A tsunami has hit the pirate ship known as Democrat today. In other words, instead of the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria finding a new world, okay, you ready for this one? Instead of the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria searching for a new world and for new freedoms, this little triumvirate of little ships called Obama, Pelosi, and Reid was seeking a darker world, a meaner world, a less free world, and they lost today. They got lost at sea by a federal injunction. When I come back, what I'm going to do for you that's so darn important is explain to you why the federal court today ruled that a central element of the health care law violates the Constitution. I'm going to go back, believe it or not, to Brooklyn. I'm going to go back to Brooklyn and a few little kosher butchers in the 1940s who sued Franklin Delano Roosevelt and won. I put this in my book because I was hoping that a judge would read this and recognize that the law actually supports the position that the Marxist socialism of Obamacare is unconstitutional and that we the people could win. It's all in my book, The Health Scare Fraud, What's Really in the Bill. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You got to understand that we live in a democracy despite Pelosi and Reid and Obama, despite their protestations to the contrary. We are not living in a dictatorship mandated by a group of left-wing fanatics from the universities who have taken over the country. And I've said to you along the way that this country has survived its fools, it has survived its knaves, it has survived its drunkards, it has survived its womanizers, and it will survive this little college professor from Chicago. The country and its founding fathers anticipated a day when a usurper, when the great pretender would appear. Now the great pretender has appeared, and our Constitution has kicked in. And the little professor from Chicago, with the great booming voice, has been found to be what he's been all along, which is a fraud and an anti-American to his core. His health care mandate jammed down our throats by Madam Pelosi, the whip, has been thrown in the garbage today in the main by a federal judge. It will now go to the Supreme Court, which I predicted, and the Supreme Court will find that the judge was correct. There's no way that this is constitutional. I studied this every step of the way. I spent my times, my nights and days reading it, and I want to go again to Chapter 5, The Health Scare Fraud, What's Really in the Bill, from TUP. And I want to read you the piece from Chickens to Chicken Little, the Schechter Brothers. It's so important you hear this. Even, let's say you have the book. Would you open it up to page 148? Because I'm going to read now. And you want to get on the show? As I'm reading along, you can call in and read along. How's that? Here we go. For the better part of his first term in office, Barack Obama behaved like the central character in one of Aesop's fables, Chicken Little. Remember that one? As the tale goes, an acorn fell on Chicken Little's head, who in turn ran around like a chicken with its head cut off, shouting, "The sky is falling! The sky is falling!" Her big mistake was to misinterpret the acorn, no relationship to the infamous acorn scandal, as an omen of bad things to come. She, in turn, created a wave of mass hysteria among her friends. Things didn't end well for Chicken Little and company. They all became dinner for Foxy Loxy. In similar fashion, using a manufactured healthcare crisis, Obama spent a year whipping up the masses into a panic with his version of the sky is falling. He manipulated those fears to shove to shove socialized medicine down our throats. And while it's a bitter pill to swallow, it isn't the first time big government has tried to force nonsensical, draconian regulations on the American people. Nor will it be the last, especially given this Marxist-Leninist president's track record. America saw the same sort of government intrusion in the 1930s under President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR. Like Obama, FDR skillfully leveraged the crises of the day to usher in a number of, quote, New Deal socialist programs. As one reporter puts it, the New Deal was a heady mix of redistribution, regulation, and rhetoric. The operative word here is redistribution. That's pure Marxist socialism. Does the fact that FDR was Obama-lite surprise you? It shouldn't. You see, in the 1930s, centralized government control was appearing around the world. Russia had Stalin. Italy had Mussolini. America had Roosevelt. But Mike, you may say, FDR wasn't a fascist. He was a good guy. I'm not suggesting Roosevelt was an outright fascist. I'm saying he was dabbling in the popular thought of the day, namely that the government knows better than private business and the private sector about what's best for the people. If the prices are too high or too low, the government will fix it. If the people don't save enough for retirement, the government will force them to save a la Social Security, one of FDR's pet programs. What's more, if the sheeple don't go along with the plan, they end up with a stiff fine, which isn't hyperbole. Remember, that's in Obama's health scare bill, page 149 of the book. That said, just as this isn't the first time Americans have been shackled with unfair, unconstitutional legislation, history demonstrates a legal way to fight back and win. Did you hear what I just said to you? History demonstrates a legal way to fight back and win. I wrote it in my book, and a judge must have read this. I am not saying I'm the only one in America who was against Obamacare, nor the only one who said we're going to sue. I laid out the roadmap in trickle-up poverty, and we're winning.
Savage.
The time for bickering is over. The time for games has passed. Now is the season for action. Now is the time to deliver on health care.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
The mini Castro had spoken. Today, the mini Castro struck a tsunami at sea. And the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria of our time, that would be Obama, Pelosi, and Reid, are now caught in a hurricane because a federal court just ruled hours ago that a central element of the health law violates the U.S. Constitution. Their masts have been blown off their ships, their canvas is at sea, and they are adrift. They are unconstitutional. Now, again, of course I am going to take some credit for this, because A, it's my show, but there's a high degree of validity in what I am telling you. There is not another book that has been written as succinctly as Trickle Up Poverty, with a chapter as detailed as mine, which laid out a legal precedent for what the judge did today. I'm not saying the judge relied on my book, but I can guarantee you that you can rely upon this chapter, because I laid out exactly, well, I'll read it to you again. That said, this isn't just the first time Americans have been shackled with unfair, unconstitutional legislation. History demonstrates a legal way to fight back and win. How? Let me set the stage by taking you back to the Great Depression. And I'm going to do this for you. And I'm going to show you how the people lost sight of their freedoms in order to gain a little bit of help from the government under FDR, who put forward the National Recovery Administration, the NRA, under the guise of fairness, under the very same guise that Obama's been using. FDR mandated a number of regulations or codes of fair competition in order to minimize what he thought were destructive competition practices. Now, before I continue and I take some calls here, I want to go to a book in my hand, a religious book. I'm going to read you one line. It says, "It is well known that stealing something, even a penny, is equivalent to murder." The religious book writes, This is even more serious when one steals from the community. This is even more serious when one steals from the community. And this is derived from Exodus 27. These are derivations. These are interpretations of the Bible, Exodus 27. They say that stealing something, even a penny, is equivalent to murder. And this is even more serious when one steals from the community. And then they write, how much more so when one steals from God? When one eats without a blessing, his sin is very great. Now, although it is about making a blessing before meals, this particular rule that is given down by the religious, it's also about taking from people that which is not theirs. And so I repeat again, Obama, Pelosi, and Reid tried to steal from the community. That's what they were doing. Make no mistake about it. This was not about fairness. This was about thievery. Thievery. So I wrote, using the heavy hand of government, read along, page 149, bottom, using the heavy hand of government, intervention, think Lenin, think Stalin, FDR instituted the National Recovery Administration, NRA. His goal, under the guise of fairness, FDR mandated a number of regulations or codes of fair competition. In reality, I wrote, FDR was systematically vilifying businessmen whose leadership had brought goods to their customers, jobs to their workers, and profits to their shareholders. Why am I rehashing this history? Because, as you'll see in a moment, buried in the dusty pages of history lies the tool I believe Americans can use against the Obamacare juggernaut. Yes, a legal maneuver has been successfully used when one of the three branches of government overstepped its boundaries. Here's the rest of the story. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Living History. A talk show host named Michael Savage wrote a book that laid out a legal plan to take back America's freedoms that had been usurped by an overreaching socialist government. A judge relied primarily upon the law itself, no doubt. But I'm going to tell you something else. Mark this down. You can write this down in bronze if you want. You could set it in stone. When this case goes to the Supreme Court, the case that I cited in Trickle Up Poverty, the Schechter brothers, will be used to finally drive a dagger through the heart of Obamacare. I can guarantee you that that precedent that I pointed out will be used to destroy Obamacare whole. Now let's take a call. And I'm very excited right now. I'm racked with pain. My lower back is killing me, and I'm a very lucky man. I've never had back pain in my life. I'm in a very lucky guy. I've had a good run. But I'm in severe pain. I can hardly move. When I get up, it hurts. I sit down, it hurts. I have to be very careful. And it's hard for me to focus at this time because I won't take pain pills. I'm not going to go in for surgery. This too shall pass. It's because of, let us put it to you this way, a sea of legal troubles that I'm enmeshed in right now. Let's take a caller or two. Anthony in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I'm a screenwriter. I create a product, I sell a product, and I pay for my own health insurance every month. But I'm a little concerned with how the Republicans and conservatives are going to pitch the concept to the American people, the average American voter, that if you have a pre-existing injury or condition, your premiums are going to go up, and if you can't afford it, guess what? You're going to die.
No, I'll tell you, I have a solution to the problem because it's a very important problem that you raise. Let me summarize your question. You're saying, is it really fair to permit people with pre-existing conditions to remain uncovered? What should we do about those people? Isn't that really the gist of the question?
That is correct, Dr. Savage.
Okay, well, I have a solution. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have been running around for a year now or 2 years now telling us how mean we are for wanting to hold on what we earned and that our taxes should go up. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett give away, I don't know, a couple of billion dollars a year every year to various charities. I would suggest that the do-gooders, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, create a pool, an insurance pool, just for such people who have pre-existing conditions. Surely a few billion dollars from trillionaires like Gates and Buffett would cover it, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, Dr. Savage.
Well, there you go. That's putting their money where their mouth is. Instead of Gates and Buffett telling me I should pay for pre-existing conditions that aren't mine, let them pay for it. Let them put their charity where their mouth is instead of telling everybody what to do. How's that? Does that work for you? It works for me. And that way we solve the problem. Everybody with a pre-existing condition goes into this pool. It's paid for by Gates and Buffett with their wonderful philanthropy, and everybody's happy. Meanwhile, our taxes don't go through the roof, and we can continue to develop our businesses and our programs. I don't see why that's a bad idea, but no one thought of it but me.
Well, I think it's a good idea, too, but what are the chances that that's actually going to happen?
Well, I think it's very good once Obamacare gets thrown out. Then Gates and Buffett can be approached, since they're such wonderful givers of advice. Every other day, they're giving another speech somewhere from an airplane owned by Warren Buffett, and they tell us that we need higher taxes, and we need to give more, and we're not giving enough, and they're giving away 50% of their income. And I'm saying, good, so take 50% of what you're giving away and put it into an insurance pool just for people with pre-existing conditions. And then you could give the rest away to the arts and to the lectures or whatever you want to give it to. I think that's a fine idea. Anthony, have you read TUP yet?
I'm actually on page 58.
Okay, my friend. Thank you for being an intelligent screenwriter and caller to the Savage Nation. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but this is an amazing moment in my life. There's so many reasons to be on the radio. This is one of them. We have changed the course of human events. You and I have done so several times. We stopped the Dubai port deal. I can name several things that I've achieved as a talk show host. Let's put all of the other stuff aside. We stopped George Bush from assigning our national security to his friends in Dubai. Do you remember that one? You won't find that in his book. We've done other things that I can't even remember. I mean, I have helped through you, Colonel Chisani. I've helped through you. I am trying to help through your donations and my own, other soldiers falsely accused. There's another soldier who's in trouble right now, and I sent him $5,000. I'm going to read about him. He's on my website. This is a shocker. It's a soldier facing life in prison for doing his job, and the vermin in the military have now put this man in prison. They want to bury him for life, Private First Class Lawrence. He has parents who have spent all their money to try and even visit him in prison, but the military's grinding him up like powder. It's U.S. versus Private First Class David Lawrence. And I'm going to tell you to please go to michaelsavage.com, and I'm going to ask you to make a donation, not to me, but to him, and let's try to help him, because this is what it's all about. This is how it matters. We have to overcome the slanders of Congressman Murtha. We have to help him the way you've helped Lieutenant Behenna and Colonel Chisani. It's one thing I like to do is help soldiers in particular who are in trouble, because nobody is there for them. Nobody is there. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Few people are there for them. He's accused of premeditated murder. Why? He allegedly shot Mullah Muhibullah while guarding him in Kandahar province, Afghanistan. And this Mullah was a senior Taliban commander who had been captured by U.S. forces the day before his death. But because of politics, this Private First Class Lawrence is accused of premeditated murder for doing his job. Now, of course, if Private First Class Lawrence had had his throat cut by this wonderful practitioner of the religion of peace, this Taliban vermin, if Private First Class David Lawrence had his throat cut or his brain shot out, why, the military would be quite happy to say, what a shame. Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence, have a flag. Now we can rest assured that the wonderful, honest Karzai will not send us a nasty letter. So let's burn Private First Class Lawrence, who claims he was defending his life when he shot this Taliban commander, Mullah Muha, whatever. And the fact of the matter is that there are men dying every day in Afghanistan, and now we have a man dying in a prison because of Afghanistan, because he killed a Taliban commander who had been captured the day before, and this Taliban commander had been responsible for the death of several men in his company. That should matter to you. The man comes from a wonderful family. He has a very loving, caring set of parents who are afraid for him, and they don't have a lot of money. In fact, well, I don't want to go into everything, okay? All I know is he has a great lawyer. The lawyer wrote me. I sent him $5,000 last week. He thanked me profusely. Now it's your turn. It's up on michaelsavage.com. So what I'm getting at is the show is all about, in a way, you're going to laugh if you want. It's all about public good and the public service. At the end of the day, what am I going to remember what I did in radio? That I had a lot of fun telling jokes? That I enjoyed talking about restaurant meals and Chinese food that had my lipstick together? I do that because I enjoy doing it, because I'm a mirthful guy. But there has to be a higher purpose and a higher reason for a man's work, particularly for me to keep working. And for me, when I remember that you are such a loyal audience and you've helped these soldiers in trouble and Marines in trouble, and that you want the right thing done, it gives me a reason to keep going. Do you understand that? Otherwise, I could just disappear into the world of the white hat and the ocean and just march around and be, you know, forgotten. I mean, just I could do that, too. I could pull a Johnny Carson and say enough is enough. I've had all I can take. I don't want this anymore. It's too much stress. And the England thing, by the way, doesn't end. It doesn't end. More lawyers, more money. Many of you contributed to legal fund. More lawyers, more money, doesn't end. And now, to make it even worse, the so-called Cameron government is now going to ban someone else from America whose politics they don't like. So it's unlikely I will ever get off that list, but I have to keep fighting it because I'm not going to give up and let them be right. They're wrong. They put me on a list with murderers and terrorists, and I'm supposed to say thank you? To me, I'm falsely accused. And I'm like these guys. That's why I can relate to these soldiers. Only they're facing life in prison. I'm not facing life in prison. I'm just facing life without fish and chips and superb dental work that I would normally get in England. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, this is a very sensitive issue, the issue of health care and pre-existing conditions. Don't think I'm a monster who doesn't understand what that means. When I was a kid in college, my father got a heart attack. We had no health insurance. So I see him laying in an oxygen tent in Monticello Hospital. I had to leave college for a semester. I had to go into a store and sell things, and people try to rob me day and night. You can't believe what went on. I'll never forget what the doctor said to us. He said, well, you know, your father had the equivalent of a blowout and a tire. We put a patch on it. We don't know if it's going to hold. I never slept another night since then. Every night I'd lay awake in my bed trying to hear him two rooms down to see if he was dead or alive. Okay, that's life. But the fact of the matter is, he said to us, also the doctor, I'll be visiting him a few times a week in the hospital. It'll cost you $100 a week for us, for me. You know what $100 a week was in the 1950s? I can't do the math, but it was a lot of money. There was no income. And then on top of it, there was a hospital bill and no income because my mother didn't work. In those days, the father usually worked. So that's what went on. So I understand what it would have been nice if the government came along and said, oh, don't worry. Here's the payment. We would have loved it, but there was no government. So you're saying, well, what are you arguing? That there should be a payment? No. What I'm saying to you is there's a limit to what a government can do and a limit to what a government should do, especially when the government's broke because it's spent like a drunken sailor. So you say, well, okay, that's all well and good. We're broke. You're a fiscal conservative. So what do you do with people with pre-existing conditions like your father with a heart attack? I just said to you, you have bleeding heart liberals who cry every day about you should give more higher taxes and give us more. And then who's doing it the most? Bill Gates. Bill Gates, trillionaire, and Warren Buffett, trillionaire. Every day they say, give more, pay more. You're not giving enough. You're mean. Be like us. Then you got Bill Gates' father demanding an income a state income tax in Washington, screwing everybody who moved there to get away from, you know, exorbitant state taxes. What do they care? They made their bundle. Now they can tell you to do it, to go to hell and do it. You pay more money because they want you to. So I've come up with a solution. Let Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and the other billionaires, the other bleeding heart liberal billionaires, put together a pool of money. I don't know, $10 billion? That's nothing to them. It's just chicken feed. And that's a pool for pre-existing conditions. If they ever did that, and then they managed how those pre-existing conditions would be financed and who would be qualified, I can guarantee you a lot of the fakers out there, including some listening to this show, would suddenly be found to not have pre-existing conditions that should be covered by anybody because they made the whole thing up, or they're not as sick as they say they are, or whatever. See, that's the benefit of having a private plan paid for by Buffett and Gates. It wouldn't be the government all of a sudden. Just put a businessman in charge of it. Then I can guarantee you it would be a lot more efficient. Okay? So it's a very good idea. Wisconsin Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
I hope your back gets better and all that is. But when I heard
I may need some treatment for my pre-existing condition very soon.
I may not take any more. Get back to this. when I heard the news about the Supreme Court today, I kind of laughed. I thought there was another savage crystal ball moment. You're like the Swami. I think you hit it 100%.
This was not Supreme Court. This was a federal judge in Virginia who ruled, but it's going to go to the Supreme Court. But there's no question in my mind the Supreme Court will reject Obamacare as overreaching and unconstitutional because there's legal precedent for it with the Schechter Brothers case. Have you read it in Trickle Up Poverty, my friend?
Yep, I have. I heard it on your show, and I read it in the book and even more.
Well, you see, I'm sure that lawyers have read it and doctors read it, and I think every doctor in the country should read my chapter, for God's sakes, to know what they're facing here. But, Dave, I'm so glad you listened to me in your liberal state of Wisconsin. You must be living in a nightmare there, huh?
I might be the only one here, maybe. I feel kind of secluded.
I don't think you are. I'm surprised almost every day by people I run into in business or in other places who I had assumed were liberals because of the business they're in or the community they live in. And they all whisper to me, Michael Savage, keep it up. We believe in everything you say. I think a lot of people have been beaten into corners to pretend that they're liberals, but they recognize what Obama has done to us, and they want it over with. Thank you very much for the compliments, my friend. So in the minute that remains in this hour, before we come back on this incredible news today that Obamacare has just been struck almost blind, demasted, if you want to put it in the sailing context, the three little ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, Obama, Pelosi, and Reid, the three little ships of socialism have been demasted. The canvas is torn in the sea, and they don't know which way to turn. They're rudderless, basically, in the waters that they created. The waters that they tried to sail America into, they are rudderless and demasted, and they don't know which way to turn. And thank God for it, before they drag us into hell altogether, before they take us over the cliff into Hades. I mean, I don't think that the world is flat, don't get me wrong. But with these people in power, they're liable to convince us that the world is flat, and that we should follow them over the cliff. When I come back, we'll pick up the case of Obamacare being dealt a serious blow, how I laid all the entire legal case out in Trickle Up Poverty and why I am happy. And then I will give you my recipe for paella, which I cooked last night, and the half a bottle of Chianti that I had and what it did to my brain.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The time for bickering is over. The time for games has passed. Now is the season for action. Perfect. Now is the time to deliver on health care.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like a slave on deep.
Okay, so the great man from Hawaii or Indonesia or Kenya or wherever, has finally run into a tsunami. He and Pelosi and Reid have had the ships that they were running into the seas of socialism demasted. The canvas is gone, and they have lost a very, very serious first round that will inevitably go to the Supreme Court, and I'm convinced by my studies that they will lose in the Supreme Court. And that is because there's case law against such overreaching by a government. What I am talking about is Obamacare got struck almost a fatal blow today. And we know that it was wrong from the beginning. We know they jammed it down our throats. We know that the absurd Nancy Pelosi used extra constitutional acts to get this through. We know that this entire team of Leninists and Marxists and otherwise bad people forced this down our throats against the will of the people. It's supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And Pelosi and Obama could care less about the people. They care about their own agendas, and they care about forcing themselves and their will upon us. And that is called dictatorship. You know that. And the popularity, or shall I say the lack thereof, of Obamacare is at a higher level than it was even when they jammed it down our throats. But as I want to say to you again, as I did in the last hour, don't lose sight of the freedoms that you're giving up with this guy and with Pelosi. You may say, well, I'm getting a little security in the form of health care for those with pre-existing conditions. As I said to you in the last hour, that's a serious question. It needs to be handled delicately and intelligently. And I came up with a solution that no one has recommended but me. As usual, I'm way ahead of the thought process in America. And I'm saying that for good reason, because somebody has to think beyond what people are saying or thinking. No columnist, no pundit has thought of what I came up with today. People said, well, how are you going to fund pre-existing conditions if Obamacare is ultimately found to be unconstitutional and destroyed completely by the Supreme Court? And I came up with an answer. And the answer is really, really straightforward. And that is, take the billionaires like the liberal billionaires, that is, like Bill Gates of Microsoft fame, and Warren Buffett of many company fame, who continuously tell us that our taxes are too low, we're mean, we should pay more money, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying they should set up a pool of funds to the tune of several billion dollars of their own donations for pre-existing conditions, and they should administer it, not the government. Because if they apply business practices, common business practices, to such a pool, they would then get to screen people who claim they have pre-existing conditions, and they would probably come up with a prepay or a copay that's realistic rather than a no-pay, and therefore it might be solvent, such a pre-existing condition pool that would be set up by Buffett. And it's not just to punish them. In other words, let them pay for it and let them run it. And then in so doing, we'll wind up with an element of care for people who may or may not need it. Because as you well know, there are a lot of pre-existing conditions that shouldn't be covered. There are some that should be covered. And then there are a lot of people who have money hidden who should be ferreted out and pay for their own pre-existing conditions and so forth and so on. I don't have to go into every detail. The bottom line here is that Obamacare is a racket. It's socialistic. It was against the will of the people. It was forced down our throats through extra constitutional means. And today it suffered a devastating strike to the heart. And so I want to go now to the 1930s and the Obama administration and the Roosevelt administration and what Roosevelt tried to do to America then. And I'm going to show you what I laid out in Trickle Up Poverty, okay? It's very important. You got to understand how important this stuff is. This is not just talk radio anymore. This is changing the course of human events. Hartford, Connecticut. Rooney, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
You know, it would be a pleasure for me to pick up where you left off on page 150, but I would skip over the details of the Schechter case and go to the summary that came after that. But I'd rather approach this as the greatest Christmas gift we could ask for.
It is. It's amazingly inspiring to realize that despite all the lies of the liberal media, despite all of the gangster tactics of the Obama administration, the founding fathers have won. They have won because they anticipated a day like this would come in this country. That's the way I look at it. As I said, this country has survived its scoundrels, its drunks, its womanizers, and I'm convinced we will survive this character from wherever. Now, why don't you skip to the summary, because I think that's a great... Which summary? Where is the summary?
You left off on 150 at the top, and I'm skipping over the details of the Schechter case and going to your summary that follows it on 151.
Oh, please do it, because my voice is going. Let me hear you read it.
I hope I can do it justice, but I just want to repeat that this is not just a great day for you, and it is a great day for you. And I think that we're in deep debt to you, because not only have lawyers read this, but lawyers with robes have read this.
Yeah, I think they have read my book, because I did a lot of the work for them. Listen, I had people I hired to read that bill for me and give me summaries as though I was a senator having to vote on it. I didn't just write this chapter out of the blue. This is a very carefully researched chapter, and I think that my listeners appreciate that and frankly expect nothing less from me, because I am a scholar by training. Rooney, you have a wonderful voice. Where are you going to pick up from? What page?
I'm on 151, third paragraph down.
Go ahead.
Where it gets into Judge Brandeis's admonition to the president.
Go ahead.
The court said that FDR's regulations were a usurpation of congressional power. After the decision was handed down, Justice Louis Brandeis told the lawyer representing FDR's New Deal, "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It has come to an end."
I got chills up my spine because when you read it, I actually saw it anew, afresh. I'll pick up from there because here's what I wrote after that. Back then, we had justices who could speak plain English and tell the plain truth. Imagine one of our Supremes drawing a line in the sand against this president in such a direct manner. This brings us to how Obama's Frankenstein health care bill can be repealed. And then I laid out how it could be repealed. And I think that you're right. And I think lawyers and robes did read my chapter in order to draw their own conclusion, in order to find the case law that they could use to throw this monster into the sea. It is a great day for America, Rooney. And I'm not looking for the credit, but you know, and I know, that when you see 140,000, 150,000 people have bought this book, whatever, and they've shared some of this with others, that means 300,000 people have been educated as to what's in this bill, and this has affected the body politic and affected not only that, but the ruling elite as well. And I think we are winning. I do really think we are winning. I know we changed the course of the election. I know that. You know, I got to say this, Rooney, to you and everybody else. I believe this show reaches the independent more so than any other show in the radio. If this show is the third or fourth largest in the country, which it is, and if the other two or three are all Republican fronts, which they are, then I represent the voice of the independent more so than anybody in America. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yes, but it gets better. This takes it to a whole new level. This gives us hope that we can lobby the judges in a way that Mary Bonato, representing the gay, lesbian advocates and defenders, have lobbied the Supreme Courts of five states, and Anne Stambaugh, president of Love Makes a Family, and the GLBT Alliance, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Alliance.
So you're saying because they have lobbied so effectively, so now can we, the people, lobby in our own directions in many, many cases, including Obamacare, right?
This is huge. And
it means that we, the people, are being heard, Rooney. I agree. For the first time, the extremist lobbying groups are no longer the only voices being listened to by the politicians and by the judges. They're all hearing us, we, the people. And I think it has to do with it. The internet, talk radio, the town hall meetings, and, of course, the great Tea Party movement that is now being usurped and co-opted by the Republican Party itself, Rooney. That's the real danger, is what the Republicans are doing to the Tea Parties. We've got to be very careful not only by what the Republicans are doing, and I'm not going to name names because you know who they are. Some talk show hosts are also, in a way, triangulating the Tea Party movement and trying to move them back into the Republican fold, and in doing so, undermining the very essence of the Tea Parties. You know exactly who I'm talking about, Rooney, I am sure.
No doubt, but it leads to this. You say, keep in mind, this is something you can do rather than wait around for the check pants Republicans to act. They've already signaled they won't go to the mat to repeal the unpopular measure. They're cowering before the ever-arrogant President Obama, and that is Obama.
Well, but wait a minute. This was taken to a federal judge in Virginia. The next step is going to be taking it to the U.S. Supreme Court. In fact, Obama himself may take it to the Supreme Court because he's so arrogant and so filled with hubris. His own people are liable to say that the judge is wrong. We want to take it to the Supreme Court. I know how arrogant people function. So he's going to say, oh, no, the judge is wrong. I'm going to take it to the Supreme Court. He will lose at the Supreme Court level because there's legal precedent for uncoupling Obamacare. The Schechter brothers case is only one of many. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We go through the gate's closed, we'll go over the fence is too high, we'll pole vault in. If that doesn't work, we'll parachute in, but we're going to get health care reform passed.
How is it that a plan that is pretty centrist,
a plan that is pretty centrist, well, I guess in his circle it's pretty centrist, but in America, it was radical leftist. Yes, it was pretty centrist amongst Chavez, Castro, and Kim Jong-il. I would say that Obamacare would be considered centrist. But amongst Americans, it was very uncentrist. So without boring you with reading the chicken story, the Schechter Poultry Company, it's a phenomenally interesting case, by the way. But I don't think I want to read it to you. But it's about four Jewish brothers who were put in jail because they tried to stand up to FDR. He put them in jail because he told them how much to charge for their kosher chickens. They did not want to sell chickens at the same price that the government wanted them to do. The Schechter brothers were kosher butchers, and they had to remove sickly or dangerously unhealthy chickens in order to comply with kosher food laws. That flew in the face of the new regulations handed down by FDR's totalitarian mandate. Why? The government said that customers had to buy either an entire coop of chickens or half a coop of chickens, but they were forbidden to pick out particular birds in the transactions. What did it mean? In other words, the new law forced the Schechter brothers to sell unhealthy chickens to people who didn't want to buy them. Somehow operating a, quote, kosher business that way made sense in the upside-down world of Bolshevik liberalism. But from the Schechter brothers' viewpoint, this was nothing short of a violation of their religious freedom. This meant nothing to the government, I wrote, which cracked down on the Schechter brothers, saying they could not sell chickens their way. They had to sell them the government way or go to jail. Well, the brothers failed to comply. Having run afoul of the live poultry code of the NRA, they were arrested, if you can believe this. You see, you don't know history, but I'm giving it to you. They were arrested and tried in court where they went head-to-head with the government lawyers. We're talking in the 1930s. And this is all from page 150 of Trickle Up Poverty. I'm so excited that this book has turned out to be so important to this country. So let me go on. Let's not lose sight of the fact that these men were uneducated men and had no legal training. While what they did have, legal representation, they didn't have deep pockets and could not hire some big shot lawyer from a top law firm to represent them. In fact, their command of English was broken, and their intonation and syntax were the sort we today associate with a stand-up comic from the Catskills. In the end, the court found them guilty as charged, fined them a year's wage, and sent them to prison. But the story doesn't end there. These four little Jewish guys, the Schechter brothers, appealed their case, which ended up in the United States Supreme Court, and against all odds, in Schechter Poultry Corp. versus United States, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled in favor of the Schechter brothers. The Supremes ruled that FDR's program was unconstitutional on several levels. Of primary concern was the way his NRA program sought to regulate interstate commerce. Constitutionally speaking, interstate law is governed by the states and not the feds. Now, I want to pause there because what happened today is analogous. A federal court ruled Monday that a central plank of the health law violates the Constitution. U.S. District Judge Henry Hudson said the law's requirement that most Americans carry insurance or pay a penalty exceeds the constitutional boundaries of congressional power. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know it, you are living through phenomenally interesting times. You have seen a Marxist socialist government come to power. You have seen, let's go backwards, you have seen secret hands create a banking crisis that was not necessary to have occurred. We have seen billionaires become trillionaires in wrecking our economy, because you got to understand something. The money didn't disappear. The money you have lost in the 401ks, the money you lost when Lehman Brothers went out of business, the money that you said was, the money that you were told was gone, it wasn't gone. Money didn't disappear. It didn't go into the air. It was stolen. It was stolen by men much bigger than Madoff. And they are still walking around free on this planet. That's right. Some of them are called senator. Some of them are called congressman. Some of them are called this. Some of them are called that. They engineered this crisis, as I pointed out in my brilliant book, Trickle Up Poverty. Because it's not just about Obamacare. How did we get here? How did we get a communist government in power out of nowhere? The country, after all, is not a leftist. Country is not to the left of center. I have said to you for years, I know the country's not a right-wing country, but the country is a centrist country, or I would say center-right. More particularly, if I define what the politics of this country are overall, it'd be center-right. How do we wind up with a radical, off-the-charts, radical left-wing government with secret czars running everything, and then Obamacare, like out of Cuba, forced down our throats? You have to understand it's all spelled out in my brilliant discourse. It's 10 PhDs in that book. There are 10 PhDs in that one book. And I am so proud to tell you that I wrote it. How do you like that?
Savage.
All right, so a judge has struck down a key provision of the health law. He ruled that it was overreaching, exceeds the Constitution. I'm celebrating because my book has a whole chapter which laid out the legal basis for this claim. It's not over, but it will go to the Supreme Court, and I'm convinced that the Supremes will rule in the same exact way because this law is unconstitutional. It is. There's no question in my mind that the individual mandate would invite unbridled exercise of federal police powers, wrote Judge Hudson. Police powers. Do you have any idea what this means? I mean, there's so much in this. You have no idea. The mandate would make you buy health care, which is against the law, unconstitutional. And the ruling says at its core, this dispute is not simply about regulating the business of insurance or crafting a scheme of universal health coverage. It's about an individual's right to choose to participate. So I then made an analogy. I said the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria have tried to take this country into the sea of socialism, and they've been demasted and their canvas torn asunder. I like to use nautical analogies because I'm a boater. And it reminded me of something, the actual Nina Pinta and the Santa Maria, you know, the three ships that Columbus used to explore the New World and all of that. I had an old friend who died a number of years ago, beautiful man, a microbiologist, parasitologist named Bob Desowitz. And he wrote a book called Who Gave Pinta to the Santa Maria? Torah Diseases in a Temperate World. I just went into my bookshelf here in the studio. I want to read you a paragraph because many of you don't know what Pinta is. And he says, this book starts with the little creatures the first American immigrants brought with them on the long walk from Siberia 50,000 years ago and moves on to all that unwanted baggage that sailed over with the Spanish, the French, and the English and killed Native Americans in huge numbers in the 16th and 17th centuries. And then he says, the Native Americans, it appears, got some revenge by passing syphilis, including Pinta, a feisty strain of syphilis, back to Europe with Columbus's returning sailors. Then he says, nor have the effects of these diseases on people and economics been fully appreciated. Did slavery last so long because Africans were semi-immune to malaria and yellow fever while southern whites of all ranks fell in thousands to those diseases? It's an interesting book. And he talks about the tropical diseases that are as American as the heart attack. Yellow fever, for example, lived happily for centuries in Philadelphia. You don't know that. Malaria liked it fine in Washington, not to mention in the Carolinas where it took right over. The Ebola virus stopped off in Baltimore, and the Mexican pig tapeworm has settled comfortably among Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn. Fascinating stuff, but those are the kind of wonderful people I once knew. I miss them. I miss them, really, truthfully. They're wonderful. They're gone. I'm sure some like him still exist, but he's in the next world. I hope he's enjoying himself, eating some gefilte fish with God. It's funny, you know, I find a book that a friend of mine wrote, and I found an email fell out of the book, and he from Bob Desowitz, Monday, January 3rd, 2000, 7:50 a.m. to Michael A. Savage. Dear Michael, returned from our trip to the end of the world, Southeast Asian precipice, to find your facts. Listen to this. He wrote, congratulations. It's when I just went into talk radio on a national level. So he says, and I knew him when I was, you know, in the professor ranks trying to get ahead, and I was blocked because I was a white male. And he says, congratulations, he says, all those years in the non-remunerative chlorophyllic kingdom when your true métier lay elsewhere in a natural talent for discourse. I mean, you talk about literacy, right? We had a good trip to Cambodia, Angkor Wat and Phnom Penh, Vietnam, Saigon, to Hue, to Hanoi, Laos, retracing some old malaria trails of 30 years ago, and finally to Bangkok to see my old lab and friends, mostly dead. Hanoi was our favorite city, rather Paris-like. Angkor was as spectacular as advertised. May you have a happy and rewarding next 100 years, Bob. Just beautiful stuff. I've known some wonderful people in my life, and I hope I will meet some in the future. But let's get back to the business at hand. You learned what Pinta is. I didn't even know what Pinta was. I have no idea what Pinta was, nor am I sure that Pinta came from the Native Americans by what I've recently... I thought that Pinta meaning... Oh, I see. Pinta, a feisty strain of syphilis. Okay. Went back to Europe with Columbus's returning syphilis. Because when I was in grad school, I learned that syphilis originated amongst yamas. That was the theory at that time. The animal, the yama, had this animal-like syphilis. And that the conquistadores from Spain... let us say, took their way with the yamas, because they were away from their wives for a long period of time, so what's better than a nice animal? And the zoonotic infection known as syphilis leapt into the human being, the conquistadores, who brought the zoonotic infection back to Europe And so it spread. That's what I had learned at that time. It's very interesting because it's similar to another disease of our time, which came from the animal kingdom, but because of certain practices of individuals entered the human population. So very, very intriguing, the zoonotic infection into the human being and how we wind up with it. Now, I'm not going to make a punchline about socialism because it's an easy one to do, but it'd be like walking up to a basketball hoop if I was 10 feet tall. 1-800-449-8255. Israel in New York, welcome from WOR. What's on your mind, Israel? It's a great day, is it not?
Yeah, 24 degrees right now in New York. I wanted to call because you were discussing...
Wait a minute. That's a great answer. I say it's a great day, you say 24 degrees. All right, I accept that. You like cold weather, but that's not what you're calling about. What are you calling about?
I was calling because you were discussing before your plan with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett in regards to the insurance. And okay. I realized that you were even more right than you even realized because it's a perfect match for Warren Buffett being most of his money that he's made is in insurance and reinsurance. Berkshire Hathaway, everybody knows, owns Geico, but most of the money is in reinsurance. So he already has the infrastructure for this idea that you propose. So
there you go. So in other words, it's a twofer. Not only should Warren Buffett fund the pre-existing conditions in a new pool of insurance with his own money, but even as the infrastructure set up to investigate it and run it. Perfect.
Perfect.
You see, sometimes you're right that I don't even realize how right I am.
Bless, Michael, and everybody out here is huge fans.
Well, no, it's a very good idea because that's going to come right up. Right away, we're going to get the hearts and flowers from Obama. He's going to get out the PR. Oh, how are you going to take care of it? He's going to bring out Mrs. Smith. Has an extra nose that grew out of the back of her head, and she can't go to the beauty parlor without being laughed at, and how are we going to take care of Mrs. Smith's extra nose, and only through Obamacare can we care for a woman like Mrs. Smith and her 17 children on welfare. You know that's coming.
Yeah, there's no end, but, you know, you got to, plan for the worst, hope for the best, you know?
All right. Well, thanks for telling me I was wrong, even though I was right, or right, even though I was wrong. Masters of deceit. Masters of deceit. Masters of deceit. Communists are masters of deceit. You don't understand that. These are not stupid people. They are masters of deceit, which is the title of a book written by one J. Edgar Hoover. Way back when, old J. Edgar Hoover, the man who has been laughed at, published this in 1958, Masters of Deceit, What the Communist Bosses are Doing Now to Bring America to Its Knees. He saw this coming. And, of course, the commies smeared J. Edgar Hoover in so many different ways. But he knew what they were doing. God, if we only had him in the FBI today, I can guarantee you, you wouldn't be sitting there afraid of a bomb going off in a supermarket. I can guarantee you, if we had J. Edgar Hoover, our dear friends who are sitting there with alarm clocks and cell phones and the C4, I can guarantee you they wouldn't be having a little fun after studying at Leeds University or God knows where. I can guarantee you J. Edgar Hoover would have them up against the wall somewhere, or they'd be inside a police station with a lamp swinging around. I can guarantee you they wouldn't be so arrogant in our country running around with front groups who say that every time we drag one of them in before he's about to kill us, that we overreached or we racially profiled. And I can also guarantee you if J. Edgar Hoover was in power right now, still alive rather, and in power in the FBI, your grandmother wouldn't be strip searched at an airport. And your little child wouldn't be made to cry at the airport. But let us say certain groups that are possibly in a higher category of threat, they'd be going through this humiliation. But we don't have J. Edgar Hoover, do we? No, we don't have leadership anywhere. Instead, we have timid little men worrying about their retirements and looking over their shoulder and appeasing every pressure group, including the enemy himself, putting our soldiers in prison when they do their job. Oh, let me not go down the shopping list of my discontent, because this is not really my winter of discontent. Let me tell you that right now. This is not my winter of discontent. This is the beginning of my winter of being very content indeed. We have won a huge victory today. I know many of you don't really see it that way because, you know, sometimes you're so busy in your own life. Who cares about politics or who cares about law? Who cares about what the government does? They're all no good. It's easy to say that. It's easy to say they're all no good. That's the dummy's answer. The dummy who doesn't want to think, the lazy answer is, oh, they're all no good. Or both are the same. What's the difference? What happened? That's the dummy's answer. I've heard it too many times from people who are lazy, intellectual sloths who don't want to really study an issue. They write, they give you a statement. Oh, they're all no good. They all do the same thing. That's nonsense. They're not all no good, and not everyone does the same thing. And there are judges who know the law, and there are judges who care about the people. Okay, and we have that today. So it's a good day. It's a very good day indeed. And I want to talk about it. I'm so excited by this. I don't even know how to end this discussion because it's just beginning. You're not going to see this trumpeted as the victory it is. The vermin in the media, the socialist vermin in the media, are not going to tell you what happened. Remember last Friday when the show ended? This show was like a serial that's been going on for 16 years. One day at a time, like the Lone Ranger serial. Every day is a continuation of the day before. Remember on Friday, I got so excited when Bill Clinton took over the podium and Obama stepped away to go to a party. Remember? I was shocked. I said, this is one of the most shocking occurrences that I've ever seen on the national stage. And didn't I tell you that the media would hush it up, cover it up, push it away? And they did. They didn't even play the tape. They didn't even show you Bill Clinton going on and on with the president, literally shrinking away like a student, running away from the scrutiny of the media. They didn't play it that way because they're in cahoots with Obama. In fact, I'll tell you again what they're going to do. You think they're going to tell you about the judge and what he did today in this way? They're not. The vermin at the Associated Press, they're going to spin it for the Obama administration. They're going to say, radical right-wing judge appointed by George Bush strikes minor point of health care law. And Obama's going to save us from the evil American judges put in by... Come on! Don't look to the news for your answers. Because if you do, you're sure to come up short. You won't really know what's going on. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I never stop whipping. There's no beginning, there's no middle, and there's no end. My life is a constant whip operation.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. I want it for you.
Well, it looks like B.O. can use some scope today. It looks like B.O. can use some scope. A federal judge struck at the heart of the health care law. And it looks like it's going to go to the Supreme Court for sure, and they're going to lose again because the Schechter case that I have pointed out over and over again from the beginning is clear on this issue. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. Right? You want me to go on? Because it's pretty short but pretty important for your children to hear this one. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Rudyard Kipling, if. Rudyard Kipling, if. Not taught in the universities anymore because it's too good. It's too inspiring. And it might help your son become a man. And as you well know, the universities stand for the opposite. You also know that Kipling was rejected by the socialists of his time, the early socialists, who attacked him for being too militant. You've heard that before. The same folks who do not attack Al-Qaeda or the Taliban for being too militant. The folks who tear asunder the tenets of Jesus Christ or of the Ten Commandments are oh so silent when it comes to the practitioners of hatred, those who would blow your children to kingdom come in a supermarket. They're oh so silent when it comes to them. That's because we no longer have Kiplings permitted to be taught in the universities. Last night I walked around a mall. I looked at all of the junk in all of the stores. I couldn't believe it. I mean, one store, it looks like they all sell the same thing. I walked through a mall. It looked like every store was selling permutations and combinations of the same stuff made in China. I didn't care what the chain is called. It didn't matter. It was all the same. one store to the other, it was almost all the same merchandise. I couldn't believe it. Like 50 stores, and they all sold the same thing. There was almost no difference. And I can't understand how corporate America functions. How they make the same things under their own label, and everybody sells the same. I don't understand it anymore. I'm walking around, and I see the Zomboids buying, and I see them running and shopping, and they're my fellow Americans, and I scratch my head, and I say, don't they realize the danger they're in? Don't they understand that this could all go away? Don't they understand that there are people who want to turn them into slaves? Don't they understand any of this? And the answer is no, they don't. Because they've been brainwashed. They're perfect victims of a perfect storm that is hitting this country. And I don't have to reiterate what I've talked about for 16 straight years, borders, language, and culture, made into dirty words by the vermin on the left, borders, language, and culture, made into dirty words by the vermin on the left, borders, language, culture, made into dirty words by the vermin on the left. Do I have to repeat it over and over again until you understand how an entire generation has been lost? No, I don't have to do it. But I can tell you that we still have a nation of laws. We still are a nation of laws, and although a gang, a Marxist gang, has taken over the country, in my humble analysis, the Marxist gang has today been demasted. Not finally and not once and for all, and I can guarantee you the masks are going back up. I can guarantee you that minions, both domestic and foreign, are sailing out with attendant ships to bring back some of the masked material, put new masks on their ship, and supply them with new canvas to continue their sailing America into the sea of socialism. But I can guarantee you that this is not the last time they're going to be demasted. It will happen again and again and again. Now, does that mean that Obama has been vanquished finally? No. No, no, he won't give up. Don't for one minute think he's weak. He's weakened in his agenda, but he's not weak. Don't make that mistake. Never underestimate the enemies of freedom. Never. Never underestimate the danger we are still in. Reid is still there. Pelosi is still there. Obama is still there. Michelle Obama is still there with her. I never saw anything like this. She's calling obesity a national security issue. Have you ever heard of anything as crazy as this? Can you believe a first lady would be so off the wall that she would give a speech where she says that child fat is a national security threat? And that we can't leave it up to the parents. It's up to the government to make sure your child is fit. Again, it looks like North Korea to me. Why does she just give out little green uniforms? Why not just little green uniforms for everybody to wear? And that she can get some minions to tell them what to think, what to do, what to say, what not to do, and put them on Ritalin. Dope up the entire country. It's not doped up enough. No, not doped up enough. There's John Boehner crying again. Every other day breaks into tears. That's what we have now. That's running the game for us. I'm not against a man who cries once in a while, but keep it to yourself. This is inappropriate. The pink tie now. We had this already with a few of the leaders. What's with the breakdowns and the crying every other day? Well, what's he crying about? The guy is a strong guy, comes from a great family with a lot of brothers and sisters, and people support him in Ohio. What's with the crying every other day? I don't like the crying. Keep it to yourself if you got to cry. Go in a back room and have a good cry. You know what I mean? Get a box of Kleenex and cry in there, and then come out on the congressional floor. I don't like my leaders crying, especially when it's supposed to be the conservative Republicans. What if they're crying every other day with the pink tie and the pink shirt? No, I don't go for it. We all have something to cry about, but many of us learned to stop crying a long time ago. Many of were taught by our fathers, don't cry. You'll be a girl if you cry. Okay, stop crying like a girl. Oh, I know that's not popular anymore. It's supposed to be like the Caesars of ancient Rome, where everyone lets their feminine side hang out. You know what? Put your feminine side back in. You know what I mean? Put it away. We don't need it anymore. Let's see the masculine side for a while. Let's give them a real show of strength in this country. Let's give them a run for their money, all of these metrosexual, communist, socialist bums who are trying to turn us into serfs. I would like to say to you, my friends, but I can't do it because it's a national show.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show,
the Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Where specifically does the Constitution grant Congress the authority to enact an individual health insurance mandate?
Are you serious?
Yes, I am.
Absolutely. Sees the sun going down and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round.
Big news today, and I mean big news. There's nothing but this is the biggest news of the year. It gets bigger by the day. Is that a federal judge just ruled that the health care law, Obamacare, is unconstitutional. This is an amazingly important story. It is the biggest legal setback yet to the Obama administration's attempts to impose socialized Cuban style medical care on America, because the judge said that Congress exceeded its constitutional boundaries when it required most Americans to carry health insurance or pay a fine. Now, what's interesting to me is not only is this correct, but that I spent an entire chapter in Trickle Up Poverty on this subject, the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill, okay? And I go into great detail, which I'm going to spend this entire week discussing with you. I want you to understand how important this subject is. Because as I wrote on page 117 on March 23rd, 2010, with the stroke of a pen, our naked emperor signed a death certificate in what was once the greatest healthcare system in history and the envy of the world. Those are my words. I wrote he did so even after the overwhelming majority of Americans, a full 61%, no doubt you the listeners, opposed the law, saying Congress should scrap that plan and start all over again. As the deadline for passage of Obamacare approached, an estimated 100,000 calls an hour from irate voters bombarded Congress. This is all in trickle-up poverty. Then I go on. None of that mattered to Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, or Harry Reid. In order to usher in socialized medicine, these demon cats shackled the middle class with $2 trillion in new debt, not the $940 billion figure touted by Team Obama to get the measure passed. And that, according to the CBO, is the real cost of the bill's first decade. As the Weekly Standard pointed out, the CBO says we need to start the clock when the cost would actually start in any meaningful way, in other words, in 2014. In other words, Obamacare is a ticking time bomb, I wrote. It's set to explode after Obama leaves office, saddling us with skyrocketing debt, reduced care, and unprecedented invasion of privacy. The painful side effects caused by this bill will be lethal to the physical and financial health of Americans. Okay? And then I went on. Again, I'm reading from Trickle Up Poverty, the health scare fraud, which is really in the bill. Everything that I wrote, including the caption, A Bad Prescription for America, everything I wrote was upheld today by this federal judge who called the health law unconstitutional. You have to understand that in this 2,000-page bill, 2,000 pages, Obama's demon cats granted massive new and dangerously expansive powers to the IRS, costing $10 billion over the next decade, primarily to hire 16,500 new IRS agents and examiners. And I asked, what purpose does this health stoppo serve? President Obama knows his health care bill will be so wildly unpopular once the provisions kick in, he's preparing to marshal an army of mean-faced IRS agents to enforce full compliance. If you fail to comply, by purchasing the coverage mandated by Obamacare, the IRS has the authority to fine you up to 2% of your income. Did you hear this? And thanks to Obamacare, you must buy a health care policy. Unless, of course, you are an illegal alien. So I went on, A Bad Prescription for America, and I wrote, as if expanding the IRS, the most feared arm of the federal government known for fascist-like enforcement tactics, wasn't bad enough, Obamacare created 159 new government offices and programs. And, well, I don't think that I'm going to read you every word in the chapter. I think many of you have read the chapter, but I think that you need to understand that by the judge today declaring the law unconstitutional, the legs have been cut out of Obamacare. Now, of course, they haven't yielded at all. And all it did was tell us what we already knew. We knew exactly what this bill was doing. We understood what it would do to us. And then I wrote, your pain, his gain. I said, if you're a senior citizen, hold on to your pacemaker. There's plenty more bad news in this bill targeting you. All again on page 128. In an attempt to assuage the justified fears of seniors who smelled a rat every time the president tried to sell them on his bill, Obama told the elderly at an AARP-hosted forum, quote, nobody is talking about reducing Medicare benefits, he said, are there because people contributed into a system. It works. We don't want to change a close quote. Quote, and I wrote, guess what? As I documented a moment ago, it was just another one of this president's bold-faced lies. With Obama, you must ignore what he says and watch what he does. And I spell out exactly what this is going to do to seniors. And I ask, how will seniors be affected? And I explain how seniors will be affected. And I said, not only will Obamacare create widespread trickle-up poverty within the middle class, it is designed, yes, designed, to take away your freedom of choice. Not one or two freedoms, but dozens of them. The doctor of truth is in, and I'll break down several of them for you this way. Let's say you're a young person, you're healthy, you jog, eat right, take vitamins, drink plenty of water, and don't feel the need or want to pay for health insurance at your stage of life. Too damn bad. Section 5000A of Obamacare requires you to maintain minimum essential coverage or pay a $750 fine or 2% of your income, whichever is greater. Here's one for the single guys. Let's say you have no plans to get married anytime soon. Let's say you're 28, 48, or 88 and have no projected need for pediatric services. So you're in the market to buy a health coverage plan without an option to insure children in order to enjoy lower premiums, are you? Too damn bad. This is all pointed out in trickle-up poverty, and that's why I say this is no longer just about a book. This is about a cause, and my cause is to save America from socialism. You must read the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill. I'm going to be talking about it all week because democracy is in balance. Democracy is in balance, and it looks like the good guys just won today. We won a huge victory, again, reviewing. A judge has called the health care law unconstitutional. It's a central plank of the health law, and it's out. In a 42-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Henry E. Hudson said the law's requirement that most Americans carry insurance exceeds the constitutional boundaries of congressional power. Isn't that wonderful news? The Democrat Party is one business, and their competitor is the Republican Party. So it's like two teams. Why do you assume that, A, they have the best interests of America at heart, and B, that if the other party wins now, suddenly they're gonna learn from having been out of office for four years. When it was fact they wanted to lose, that's why they put the imposter in for 4 years. To me, it looks like the whole thing is a charade from the beginning. So Bush and the Republicans bankrupted America with $1 trillion in debt, a war that nobody wanted but him and his contractor cronies. Don't tell me we liberated the Iraqis for what? Do you remember Bush in his early years? I have a record of all of this. Bush came out and said that we're going to be compensated with reparations from Iraq once we liberate them with oil. We haven't gotten one barrel of oil from those wonderful friends of ours in the sands of Mesopotamia. Not a barrel of oil from our dear friends in Mesopotamia. And what did the boys go over there and die for and lose faces and arms and hands and legs for? So Halliburton could charge $16 for a plate of food? People are asking. So that's over, right? That's behind us. We all forgot it already. I remember also during those years, I was the years slogging here on the radio. People would call, liberals would call the show and say, well, I'm not anti-war. I'm just anti the Iraq war. And I would say to them, well, what? How would you fight those who bombed us on 9/11? Or the jihadists who want to turn us into serfs? Put your women into burqas. How would you stop them? Well, we need the correct war. The right war would be the party line. The war in Afghanistan. That's where we should have taken the war to Afghanistan. So Obama comes to power. He takes the war to Afghanistan. And then what? Nothing happens. Back where we started from. So you don't even hear about the war. The potheads on television who have these shows who support him, blindly support him, never talk about the war, ever. When is the last time one of the deviants on MSNBC mentioned the war in Afghanistan? Never. When is the last time the drug addict on HBO mentioned Afghanistan on his show, which is stocked with other drug addicts from Sunset Boulevard? Never. So everything is a lie. So here's the game. Here's the game. So the Republicans rape us for 8 years. Sorry to put it so bluntly. Then they realize that how much can you take from the people till they almost revolt, and they go crazy. So what do? They take an unknown guy. They make sure he wins the election for the Democrats so they can blame him for everything. So Obama falls into the trap. He's such an egomaniac and a narcissist. Sure, I'll be president. You sure you want it? You sure you can handle it, kid? Yeah, I'll take it. All right, we'll make you president. Then he starts, like, the first month, you see him walking up Air Force One. He's like, looks tentative. Like, whoa, where's a big, some big staircase? He didn't even know. He looked terrible. Remember going up the steps for Air Force One, how Obama looked, like, unsure of himself? Like, oh, my God, look at this reality. It's a big plane, man. And all those bulletproof limousines and the secrets. Woo! That's big. So it took him 3 months to get his sea legs. And then all of a sudden he's acting, hey, waving like Reagan. They taught him wave in the back room, get Capricorn 1, get out the make. Now, when you go up, here's the mock steps, Mr. President. When you get to the top, don't look like you're in. Wave, like, hey, make look like someone in the crowd. Oh, yeah, there's Millie. Hey, you know, do what Reagan did. Now, what do they want him in there for? So that after 4 years, so 2 years now, they could blame the Democrats for having wrecked America. Why? So they can come back and do another 8 years on us. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now to the audio on the Savage Nation. One piece I need to play for you is John Boehner breaking down and crying again on television.
There's some things that are very difficult to talk about. Family, kids. I can't go to a school anymore. I used to go to a lot of schools. And you see all these little kids running around. Can't talk about it.
Why?
Making sure that these kids have a shot at the American dream.
Again, crying on television. This is kind of embarrassing.
It's important.
And here again is Michelle Obama telling kids to stay healthy and active between trips to her ice cream parlors.
We know that ensuring that kids eat right and stay active is ultimately the responsibility of parents more than anyone else. They're trying to teach their kids the kind of healthy habits that will stay with them for a lifetime. But when our kids spend so much of their time each day in school, and when many kids get up to half their daily calories from school meals, it's clear that we as a nation have a responsibility to meet as well. We can't just leave it up to the parents.
Failed presidential candidate John McCain is fretting about the possibility of a third party developing. Really? I guess he's satisfied with the way they have watered down the Tea Party and corrupted it from within.
Unless we satisfy the message of this last election, you will see the rise of a third party in the United States of America.
Really?
I believe that.
Because?
Because they, the majority of the American people believe we haven't responded to the message. Stop the spending. Keep the taxes low. End the corruption. Have some fiscal discipline and start making some tough decisions about this debt that we have laid on every man, woman, and child in America, not only for this generation, but for future generations. Americans get it. Question is, does the Congress get it?
Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. You know, I was talking about actors and actresses, and if they're not compelling, why watch it? And how bad Boardwalk Empire was because Steve Buscemi cannot play a lead. I don't know what Martin Scorsese is thinking. I mean, this guy practically invented the leading man. I mean, in the sense that he knows Robert De Niro from day one. Robert De Niro is so magnetic You can put him in any role. Comedy, it doesn't matter. The guy is great. So, but then you're going to go like Buscemi. I mean, he's a second-rate, second-tier, very talented B actor. So that's why I said it's no good, Boardwalk Empire. It's like a bad politician, same thing. And then I was mentioning January Jones, how beautiful she was and is, and how once they moved her out of the AMC drama Mad Men, by and large moved her out. You know, it's lost it for me. And January Jones is for men who are schizophrenics. It's a term I described 25 years ago. Schizophrenia, you may not have heard of the word because it's not yet in the diagnostic manual that the doctors use. But actually, I think schizophrenia, which I defined 25 years ago for some of my friends in North Beach, schizophrenia is a malady primarily suffered by ethnic males who are fixated on the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype. And I actually wrote it up that way, and that's January Jones. She is the Nordic Valkyrian goddess archetype, that cold, you know, that cold, distant mother that you could never have. And all wrapped up with sexuality at the same time, the sexuality that even when it's available to you, you know, you're afraid of it because you don't know what she's going to do to you. The whole thing is a reflection of schizophrenia for schizophrenics, which is what makes January Jones so appealing. I mean, she's like a mean Grace Kelly. Now, they've compared her to Grace Kelly, but she's a mean Grace Kelly. Grace Kelly was never, like, portrayed as mean. That's the funny part about it. But don't get me started on the whole women thing, because I have certain views of the world that no one has ever heard that are unique to me, and they're quite poignant. I mean, to be very honest with you, I've been around long enough to have views that are poignant. And I guarantee you, I don't care who you are, no matter how cynical you are, no matter how smart you are as a psychiatrist, you never heard of schizophrenia, and if you did, it was from me. I created it in 1977.
Savage.
The Obama administration is trying to push through a new nuclear arms treaty. It's called START. We are hearing from the left that it is what Reagan did, and the Russians are chomping at the bit for us to sign it too. Well, I don't agree. Joining us now is former Assistant Secretary of Defense under Reagan, Richard Perle, who has examined this horrible treaty. Richard Perle, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's a pleasure to be on the program.
Well, from what we've seen, this treaty has no teeth. There is no guarantee that the Russians will cut anything. What is the good of this treaty?
I actually think the treaty does some harm. And the harm it does has nothing to do with the offensive weapons that are controlled under the treaty. It has to do with defensive weapons, with a defense against ballistic missiles. And what's wrong with this treaty is that it is very likely to inhibit our going forward with a robust defense. Ronald Reagan would be appalled at the jeopardy in which this treaty could place our hopes for a ballistic missile defense. And the reason for this is that the Russians have maintained that the relationship between offensive and defensive weapons is such that if we proceed to deploy missile defenses, even though they're intended to protect us against Iranians and North Koreans and possibly others in the future, if we proceed with that, they threaten to walk away from this treaty. That wouldn't matter if the treaty, if they walked away from the treaty, if the treaty is properly understood, but an administration that believes this is an important treaty is going to be intimidated by the prospect of the Russians backing out of it.
Well, we all know of our president's inexperience. Do you think, as I do, that the Russians are playing us for fools?
Well, I think the Russians are playing us very, very cleverly. They've elevated this treaty in importance globally. They're reducing their weapons because they can't afford not to. And we're reducing our weapons because we have more than we need. There's actually no real basis for a treaty between us. We should do what we think we need to do, and they should do what they think they need to do. But by linking our behavior and theirs, we're perpetuating the paradigm of the Cold War in which there were two superpowers. And that is what appeals to Prime Minister Putin about this, the sense that this bilateral treaty maintains the importance of Russia as a great power.
The far left is telling us that this is just like what Reagan signed. Mr. Pearl, what are the differences between Reagan's treaty and this Obama treaty?
Well, this is nothing at all like the agreements that Ronald Reagan reached. It's nothing like those in spirit, and it's nothing like those in substance. And the world has changed. It's not the same world. Ronald Reagan changed when the world changed. Obama seems to be mired in the Cold War. The difference between the Reagan agreements and this agreement is that the precise relationship between American and Soviet nuclear forces mattered during the Cold War. You know, we calculated very carefully how many of our missiles would survive an attack if they came under attack. Would there be enough to retaliate effectively and therefore deter that attack in the first place? But we don't do those calculations anymore. No one expects an attack from Russia. Russia is not the Soviet Union, and objectionable as some of their policies are, we're not in the lethal, potentially lethal relationship we were during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very different from the agreements of the Reagan period, and they're particularly different in a crucial respect. Ronald Reagan refused to accept any limitation on the freedom of the United States to defend itself against ballistic missiles. This treaty, unlike the Reagan treaties, will go a long way toward inhibiting our freedom to deploy a ballistic missile defense. The treaty doesn't outlaw ballistic missile defenses, but there's language in there that makes it plain that the Russians are going to hold us hostage so that if we proceed with missile defenses beyond the current very nascent defenses that we have today, they will abandon this treaty. And for someone who thinks this treaty is important, that is a serious threat, and it hands Mr. Putin some pretty serious leverage.
Well, what do you think is happening now?
Well, there's a real battle underway in the Senate. It's now caught up in all the other things the Senate is trying to do in this lame duck period. Never in our history have we had an agreement of this importance passed in a lame duck. And newly elected senators have written to ask that they be permitted to fulfill their constitutional responsibilities by voting on this when Congress reconvenes. So that's one issue. Secondly, the administration has refused to turn over the negotiating record. I believe the reason why they do this is it will show how seriously this treaty could impede our ballistic missile defense program. And they don't want to face that that criticism, so they're simply denying the record. And lastly, a group of senators led by John Kyle from Arizona are insisting that they need time to assess this treaty, they need to study the negotiating record, and they need commitments from the administration that even if this treaty goes forward, we will invest in modernization of our nuclear weapons establishment, which has deteriorated significantly in recent years.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
It's a toss-up at this point. A lot of people, without really thinking about this, without analyzing it, regard it as yet another treaty. We've had treaties in the past. They've generally come to be regarded as a good thing. And so little notice has been taken of the way in which the world has changed or the implications of this treaty for our ballistic missile defense program. This doesn't trouble the Obama administration because they don't like missile defenses to begin with. I think they'd be delighted to abandon missile defense. But for those of us who believe the United States should have a defense so that we're not naked in front of the Iranians and the North Koreans, anything that inhibits the development of that defense is a bad thing, and to the degree to which this treaty does that, it's a bad treaty.
besides this show, where can our listeners get more information on this dangerous star treaty?
Well, this is one of those cases where the conventional wisdom is, I think, wrong, but it's very powerful. So almost all the commentary on this subject has been in favor of approving this this treaty. The Center for Security Policy, Frank Gaffney, has written a number of articles on this. There was a commission, a bipartisan commission, headed by James Schlesinger and William Perry, both former Secretaries of Defense, that doesn't get deeply into this into this treaty, but does stress the importance of modernizing our nuclear establishment. And, of course, what John Kyle is insisting is that as a condition precedent to approval of this treaty, there has to be agreement with the administration for a robust injection of resources into our nuclear weapons establishment. Whether he'll get that or not, I don't know. My guess is that if he doesn't get it, the treaty will not pass.
Right, right, right.
The administration claims that it's important to ratify this treaty because we no longer have commitments from the Russians on verification of the size of their nuclear arsenal. But the fact is that we have always relied for verification principally on our satellites and our communications intercepts and other intelligence, not on what the Russians tell us, not on what they allow us to inspect. And the latter point is significant. The verification provisions in this treaty, unlike all previous treaties, limits our inspection rights to the facilities that the Russians permit us to inspect. In other words, they declare the sites, and we're permitted to inspect those sites, but no other places. This is a terrible precedent, and one can see it extended, for example, to an agreement with the Iranians at some point in the future. If you can only inspect places the other side allows you to inspect, you really don't have an effective inspection regime. So while the administration argues that this treaty will improve verification, I think it actually sets a terrible precedent, and it significantly downgrades the verification that was contained in the treaties that Ronald Reagan signed.
Richard Perle, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on the program. Look forward to the next time.
It seems that this new STAR treaty is going to weaken us tremendously and not solve anything. I spend an entire chapter on the dangers of the STAR treaty and trickle-up poverty, and I recommend that any military family read this chapter immediately, Obama's War on the Military and on National Security. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When I reach that point in life, everyone, you read the obit, immediately do the math. My math is so quick when it comes to obits now. It's faster than a supercomputer. 39, 31, 99, 59. You know what I mean? You always do those numbers. Well, that means I should have been dead in the year 2000. You know, you always do the quick numbers, referral, reverse. No, the other day, it's terrible. I drove past a house that we had rented in 1989. I rented a house. So you look back 89, you do 99, 09, 21 years ago. Like a blink job. Now you go forward 21 years and it's eternity. There's nothing there. The movie stopped already. Everyone's wearing a little blue suit with a red star, and George Soros is 114 with transplanted kidney skin on his brain, and infantile lungs have been put, and he's still alive, and now he's running the world like, you know, the madman running the universe. If this keeps up, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be one world, and you're all going to be singing happy tunes. You won't be able to get any happy meals because they've been banned in San Francisco. But you will be able to get happy tunes with Obama's name written all over them. But 21 years from now, could you imagine what this is going to be like in 21 years? The blink of an eye, 21 years from now, That's already 2031. 2031, I'm going to be 90. Out of spite, I'd like to live to 90-something. Do you know that? Out of spite, I would like to be able to be on the radio 20 more years. Just to spite the communists the rest of my life. What, you think I'm going to be that lucky? The vitamins. I'm getting tired of it all, really, looking at it. It's so depressing. It's beyond belief what they're doing to this. But we won a big victory. I mean, realistically, we knocked 60 of them out of the halls of power. Gone. Gone with the wind. They're knocked on their behinds. Gone. Like 10 pins. What I loved reading yesterday was the unions came up. The communist union leaders, the wonderful people. They said because of the hard work we did, we held on to the Senate. You hear? That's because there were virtually no Senate races. I never saw anything like this. Denial. It's like Animal Farm. Yeah, it really helped. Sure, the American people are schmucks. Let me tell you something. If every Senate seat had been up for election like the Dems, I mean like the House, you would have seen a major upheaval in the Senate. You would have seen them all on their keisters. But okay, you got to wait a little longer for this. You say, well, how come Carly Fiorina didn't win? She ran against Barbara Boxer. Answer, because Carly Fiorina was a fraud, not a conservative. She ran a middle-of-the-road campaign advised by Democrat consultants, did not say one word about illegal aliens, didn't say one word about how to fix the economy. It was all about vote for me because I'm not Boxer. What a great campaign. Same with Whitman. Let it go back to eBay now that she blew $140 million. The only people who profited were the ad agencies and her stupid advisors who tomorrow go to work for Communist Party USA. If someone asked them to work for the Communist Party, they'd recommend the same campaign. You want to win next time? I'm not in the business. Hire someone who knows what the people really want. I know what the people want. I can become the greatest campaign consultant this country has ever seen because I know what the people want more than any campaign advisor the country has ever seen. I have a direct link to the American people, particularly on the conservative side, more so than anybody in this country. And I can prove it. That's how my book became a raging bestseller with absolutely no media support whatsoever. A little teeny media support, that's all, not nothing. A little bit. It's all to do with this show and this audience. I know what the people wanted to hear. They weren't hearing it. That's why I'm joking around today. I mean, we got to take a breather. People don't want to hear this anymore. I've been up all night, I swear to God. It's one of those weird nights where I thought I couldn't even go on the air today. I got mad. You know, I did a show at 7 in the morning, which for me is frightening. Then another at 10, then 11. I'm not used to this. Then the Indian buffet. And I went back to sleep and couldn't sleep. And here it is. I have more energy than ever. The thing is, though, is that you know when you're not functioning perfectly is when your memory starts to jump. And right now, truly, it's not like I have any trouble with memory. I never do. But because of the exhaustion of the last 6, 7, 8, 10 weeks of the book and the election, my mind is a little on the memory side. I could just feel it's not firing as fast as it normally does, where I can make up jokes on the spot, create beautiful ideas, paint pictures with my words, incredible energy, and also have a great memory for almost all the facts and figures I want to remember. I really found it lacking just for one second. You'll have to forgive me. I don't know what my name is, nor do I know why I'm standing here with a microphone in my hand. Where am I, guys? Where exactly? What are we doing here? Right. Daisy, Daisy. Daisy, Daisy. My name is Hal. You remember that? That was one of the most startling scenes in the history of the movie. Do you remember that? Kubrick's 2000, and was it 2001? Imagine how long ago that was. 2001. That was interesting. Wait a minute. Didn't we get hit on 9/11? About 2001, right? Yeah, it was interesting. Anyway, but I remember when I first saw that movie, like 1970. I saw it in the Cinerama Theater in Honolulu. I couldn't believe that movie. You know that movie, 2001, when I saw it, I actually worked for my PhD because of that movie. I realized that he was projecting a future where all of the people who ran the world all had higher degrees. Do you know that? Of course, he wasn't correct. Take a look at who's on Fox News, symbol shot. But having said that, the fact is, the movie was quite influential. But do you remember when the HAL 2000, when the when he gets into the computer's brain and starts taking apart the memory chips and the computer talks to him, it was so eerie. It was so eerie. You know what I'm saying? The idea of your brain melting down like that was terrifying. We have secured perhaps the first copy of a tape of our Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, overheard whispering on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Listen to this.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Daisy. Daisy. Give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy. All for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage.
You're listening to the sound of the Treasury Secretary as he prints more money. He has no idea what he is doing or what he's printing. It sounds like the sound of the Obama administration, actually. It sounds like it, doesn't it? I mean, the overall administration sounds like that when you think about it.
Savage.